local and unafraid. This is Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on The Beacon.
I want to remind you, we've got the Beacon Morning Money Grab every weekday morning here through the end of October. So please, I want you here and, you know, keep track of those words. And
the Beacon Morning Money Grab.
Yeah, I know. That's hard for me to sign. Say,
holy cow.
Hard for me to sign. Say, the so your daughter, Jen, has gone through this nightmare for, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now.
Four and a half years now. Yeah, for all practical purposes, the case is concluded.
Sure. Filed a complaint.
No, I filed 3 judicial misconduct complaints against this judge.
Right. And then in looking at this the other day, you came up with something that I would call a parallel situation.
I did. So there was a situation in which another individual named Dongmi Lee filed a Supreme Court writ of certiorari, which is basically she's asking the Supreme Court to take a look at the actions that occurred in federal court in Connecticut in front of Judge Victor Bolden. And I saw it and I read it, and the initial, you know, the comparisons between what occurred in that case and what occurred in my daughter's case in front of this same Obama-appointed federal judge were unbelievable. Ms. Lee alleged a denial of due process, privacy right violation, judicial bias, a failure to recuse, and more importantly, what really was scary in her complaint is she's alleged that Judge Bolden allowed the use of falsified 9/11 transcripts, ignoring plaintiff's privacy objections and discovery issues. Now, one of the things and one of the basis of my judicial misconduct, one of my judicial misconducts against Judge Bolden, is the transcripts in my daughter's case were altered.
Yes.
And I mean, you can't, the transcripts were altered. In Lee's case, she's saying that the court submitted falsified 9/11 transcripts in her particular instance. Folks, this is serious stuff that's going on. And I know a lot of people are out there saying, Ed, you're banging a drum because it's involved your family. And you're right, I did.
Of course you would.
But at the end of the day, what I want to talk about to everyone is the accountability of the federal judiciary system, because, you know, these individuals who sit on these benches, okay, are lifetime appointees. They can literally, they act with impunity, if you will, in terms of what they end up doing. And there's no accountability. Now what I've done is, as you know, I've started a petition to try to be able to get him removed.
Right.
It's gaining steam. It's on change.org. Remove Judge Victor Bolden is the title of it. I'd love to be able, and I need people's support on this, because if you don't think this could happen to you in some way, shape, or form in front of a federal judge, you are wrong. Now, it's interesting. There has been a number of books that have written, and a former federal judge by the name of Posner, who actually stepped down from the bench because he, after a 30-year career on the bench, a federal judge, he basically said, I need to leave. I don't like the way pro se, meaning people who represent themselves, are being treated in the federal court system. And why do people do pro se work? Because at the end of the day,
they can't afford to.
Well, it just becomes a, what is it that Charles Dickens said? The one true ultimate truth about the court system is that it makes business for itself. That's 100% valid.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so from that perspective, it is, yes, I'm on a mission, but more importantly, I hope the mission that I'm engaged in is to be able to educate people, to be able to pay attention to what's going on, to be able to pay attention to who's being appointed, how they're being appointed, what their past rulings have been. Senator Grassley of the Senate Judiciary mm-hmm. Committee, who confirmed, I mean, Bolden was confirmed by Obama 9 years or 10 years or so ago when he was appointed to the bench. Senator Grassley called this guy an activist in a black robe.
And we have seen clearly for years, you know, it's probably going on forever, but I've been particularly conscious of it, let's say the last 30 years, of these appointments being made with individuals, finding individuals with an ideological interpretation of law versus actually following constitutional law.
Bolden was actually on record in terms of saying it's okay for people to, for judges to put their finger on the scales to tip
right.
a case.
And individuals like that have been recruited to move into these federal judge positions. And we have perverted what our nation is about. I guess I should say it this way. We have our three branches of government. Robbie and I talked about this just yesterday. What was your teacher's name that was so good?
Mr. McNamara.
McNamara. And the three branches of government. I mean, Ed, we have witnessed over the last several years this judicial activism and trying to legislate from the bench. Now, there's a large percentage of the population who has no idea that that's a constitutional violation.
Sure.
No idea.
Sure.
You know, link that back to 30 or 40 or 50 years of a public education system that has failed to educate what our unique form of government's all about.
And that's my point. My point is people need to take the time to understand what's at stake.
Yes.
People need to understand. And by the way, democracy is not a spectator sport. People need to be engaged in these types of things. People need to be able to use their voice to be able to say, wait a second, I'm not understanding what's going on. Look, in these two cases, when you have multiple judicial misconduct complaints and even a U.S. Supreme Court filing lodged against federal Judge Victor Bolden with allegations that are violations of federal rules, shutting down cases before they could be heard, showing bias that erodes confidence in the rule itself, that's a pattern.
Yes.
That's a pattern.
So my question to you, Ed Kowalski, is do you have an opportunity in this other case? What's it called? Like a
it was filed with the Supreme Court in April of this year.
Yeah, but where is it where you want to support a supporting petition? Can you do that in this case to join to that case that's already filed?
What you're talking about is something called an amicus curiae brief.
That's it.
Right. And that's a friend of the court.
Friend of the court. I was going to say friend of the court.
Kind of thing. So, yeah. I mean, what I would have to be able to do is see exactly where that case is specifically in terms of whether the Supreme Court is going to take it up. But irregardless as to whether or not they grant certiorari, meaning we're going to hear it.
Right.
We're going to hear it. The bottom line of it is the pattern was, to me, when I looked at the comparisons between the Lee case and Jennifer's case, it jumped off the page.
But
in
that's
terms
where
of what's
I,
going
that's
on.
Where I would think if you have an opportunity to file a Friends of the Court.
An amicus curiae brief?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
because that's establishing that pattern is really what's at stake here.
Interestingly enough, you know, I'm not done researching this man's decisions
right.
for the past 9 years because I have to tell you something. Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yep.
And when you see a pattern like this continuing, somebody has to be paying attention to it. Okay. Even with the crazy judiciary system and the way the process works for being able to handle judicial misconduct complaints, somebody, I'm hoping, and maybe I'm being naive, Robbie, to say, do I have hope in the system? I don't know if I have hope in the system anymore. I don't know if I have hope in the system. I've based my life in this system, and I don't necessarily know if I trust it anymore.
716, Hudson Valley Focus Live on the Beacon. Ed Kowalski in studio. We're going to hear from the Zoles with his quarter-hour sports report, and then back with more with Ed here on the Beacon.
He's the voice of the Valley. Hudson Valley Focus with Tom Sipas on the Beacon.
7:20 on Hudson Valley Focus. What was that, Mr. Benfer?
You always say that about the kids, but I know you don't really care about the kids.
I actually do.
Robbie's over there, crippled. You see his pants? He doesn't even have enough money to have all cloth on his pants. His knees are popping out of both sides.
It's very fashionable.
It's like he was attacked
Robbie.
By
it's
a tiger, very... for crying out loud. Well,
you know.
By the way, did you buy them that
poor
way?
Kid.
Or did they just
you know,
come that
maybe,
way,
maybe.
I made them that
well,
way.
You made them that
well,
way.
Well, let me change the appeal then. So we're crushing our kids under this mountain of debt.
Yeah.
What's the thing about the payback is a bitch, you know, when people now get really old and they're looking for their kids to take care of them, they're going to say, hey, you screwed me over on
Tom,
the way
I've
up.
Been told countless times when you're in a nursing home, I have to take care of you. It's come from my daughter and from younger people that are in my family. It's like, it's not a fun thing to think about.
You know, we have my mother-in-law down in a nursing facility, an assisted living facility, because that's a better term, I guess.
They're beautiful.
My gosh, you know, she's living the life of Riley, and, you know, I spend a lot of money every month for her to be there. And I don't know what people are talking about with government assistance and things like that. Like, there's nothing. There's no help at all.
In the state of New York, there is, which is one of the things.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that really gripes me, because over the years, I had insurance clients who would transfer their assets out so the kids could buy a BMW and impoverish, you know, grandma and stick her in the nursing home. And I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I have
well,
a problem
now we're
with
getting
that.
Back at them. We're running this debt up, Tom.
So, at any rate,
a good friend of mine's mom is in an assisted living home now in New York City, and she's doing so well. And my favorite story about that is when we were back in high school, I went to this woman's like 45th or 50th birthday party, and I can remember going to my friend Tom at the end of the party, and I said, "Boy, Tom, it's such a shame. It was such a nice night, but it's such a shame that your mother's going to be dead soon, because she's 50 years old. She's now like 95.
That's great.
It's called frame of reference, yeah. Robbie. It's called frame of reference.
So I have a question, though.
Yes,
why
sir.
Do the senators and representatives get paid when other people in the government don't? Why is it that they're essential workers and they should get paid when
That is a great question, and I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I think the answer is because they wrote the bill.
Right.
Right,
mm.
So... But how come nobody pays attention to that, right? Everybody's at fault when the government shuts down.
Chuck, I have to tell you something. We get the government that we deserve. Mm. That really is one of the absolute
Let me challenge that, then. I'm going to tell you why. Going back a number of years ago, a decade or so ago, it was you who educated me about that 1996 telecommunications bill.
Yep.
When
mm-hmm.
I go back and examine and really look at how much information the public has been kept in the dark about. It was devastating. So here we are 30 years later, and we have a couple of generations of people who have come along, never even exposed to this critical information, and yet they go out and the sound bite mm-hmm. that people frame. You're talking about watching CBS News this morning. Does it say CBS News?
CBS News, yeah.
And I got a note here from a listener, JT, a couple of minutes ago about he's watching the news and the liberal media has it spun exactly backward about who shut this thing down.
Well, you know, so I'm a marketer at heart, and you look at the way the messaging goes. When they assassinated Charlie Kirk, he was positioned by the liberal media as a right-wing activist.
Yes.
Right? And now they're talking about the Republican shutdown.
Yeah. Yes.
And on the other, if you watch Fox, it's the Democrat shutdown. If you listen to Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, it's the Republican shutdown. If you talk to Thune and Johnson, it's the Democratic shutdown. It's the whole government shutdown. It's a failure all the way through. And Tom, I don't know if it was you I was talking to the other day about this or not, but I have so much respect, and this is going to sound hard coming from me, but I have so much respect for, looking back in history, Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton and Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, because in the heat of trying to impeach Bill Clinton, every week Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton had dinner to talk about the business of the nation.
Right.
Every week. He's the Speaker of the House. He's the President of the United States. They're trying to get him out because he lied to Congress. However, they needed to move the country forward. Today, we're not having conversations about what's in the best interest of the country.
No.
Everything's about what's in the best interest of a Democrat, what's in the best interest of a Republican. It's ridiculous. They, at some point, we have to start running this country in the best interest of the citizens. And I agree with Ed when he says that you get the government that you deserve. 23% of the people that can vote in New York City are going to vote in this mayoral election.
Right.
That means
right.
that the 67% or the 77% that don't vote are going to get exactly what they deserve.
Right.
And if they're going to gripe that they have a communist mayor or whatever, that's on them. And so we're getting the government that we deserve. Some people are afraid, oh my God, if, imagine if 100% of the voters actually voted, what would happen? What would happen is the people, the citizens of the United States would be actively taking back control of their government.
Correct.
That's what would be actually happening. Voting is a responsibility. I happen to think that if you don't vote, you shouldn't have a driver's license. If you don't vote, you shouldn't have certain rights. I don't think voting is something that should be an option. I think it should be mandated. Get out there, be educated, and vote, and then we'll deal with the circumstances. But today, all this gerrymandering is to say, oh, there's so many of these people, these kinds of people live in these districts. Let me lump these together because they're likely voters right. in those districts,
mm-hmm.
right? You do a poll just on people, you get one set of an outcome. You do a poll on likely voters, and it's completely different.
Yes.
If you just polled people in New York City and said, would you like to have a communist mayor? The vast majority of them are going to say no. But if you poll locally likely voters, they're going to say yes. So what are you going to – Ed's right that you get what you have coming.
The lack of public education, though, across our schools in this regard about how our government even functions for the last 30 or 40 years. So back a number of years ago, it was New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli was on with me. New York State Constitution mandates that they teach about our form of government.
They do.
DiNapoli's audit of school districts said majority of school districts are in violation of the state constitution. They're not
mm-hmm.
teaching it.
Mm-hmm.
I shocked a friend of mine the other day. Yesterday we were talking, and I said, you know, the United States is the same as the Soviet Union was, right? Structurally, they were communists, we're capitalists, but structurally, it was exactly the same build. It was a bunch of independent states under a federal republic. Right. So don't talk about how bad the Soviet Union was as a structure for a nation. Part of the problem that they have today is some of their states are fighting over whether or not that's my territory or yours. You know, look back in the map and look at how much of current New York State was once Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What would happen if Massachusetts decided, wait a second, I want to get over to the lakes again. I want that part of the state back.
Now, Robbie, how do you feel about that?
I'm in New York.
And he doesn't like leather stockings.
So, there you go. So, that's right.
So Robbie just sent me a link to a Marist poll. Nearly four. And this is done September 22nd through the 26th. There's the breakdown. 27% would blame Democrats, 38% Republican, 31% both equally, 4% neither.
How many times have you seen Chuck Schumer do exactly what Chuck has just said?
Yeah.
He'll get up there, and then you go. I mean, the one benefit of having the media that we have, if you go back and take a look, this man has been on every side of every issue 15 times.
Oh.
And you play that against him, and you play that for him, rather. It really is the example of my dog ate the homework in terms of what he's doing.
Well, the big
constantly
the,
pointing fingers,
yeah.
deflecting. It's not our fault. It's their fault.
The big one was the immigration. He enumerated for us the seven reasons we're a nation of laws. We can't tolerate illegal aliens.
Every single one of them said that, including Hillary Clinton.
Yes, and then he was Speaker of the House or Senate Majority Leader. He never even advanced the issue.
Right.
It is 7:30 on Hudson Valley Focus Live, and we're going to take a quick break. Expecting a phone call with Mr. Charlie North after this break here on The Beacon.